Last night, I sat down next to Marianne in a recliner. She was in her recliner next to my recliner, and she was watching a Food Channel show using headsets that I asked her to put on so I couldn't hear the sound. I wanted to try out the new Bose earbuds that she bought for me that morning in Costco. I wanted to use it with Pandora, which is something that somebody told me about that and proved to me is really a very cool online music service. So I sat there next to her with my iPad, the Bose earbuds, and started listening to Pandora. And then I decided to open a PDF app I have on my iPad where I keep Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth in PDF form. And that was kind of cool. So when I opened it, I was somewhere in the middle of letter 8, so I quickly flipped back to the very beginning of letter 8, and then I started to read. Now, this is something that has occurred to me, I don't know how many times, since October 14, 2010, when I first received the PDFs of Christ's letters, is no matter how many times I read them, no matter how many times I go over them, everything seems to be brand new to me each time. It's like, wow. It's almost as if I've never seen it before. And when I go to bed at night, I have a Christ Returns book alongside the bed with a highlighter. And so I have the same experience when I'm reading that. And so I look at it and say, I've never read this before, but there it is, highlighted in yellow, blue, and orange. It's like, well, I guess I have read it before, but it didn't penetrate my consciousness in the way it is doing right now. I think this is a common occurrence, maybe for not just me, for everybody. And I know something else that is common, that you don't read Christ Returns as if you're reading a novel. You end up with phrases repeated over and over and over again, sentences over and over again, paragraphs over and over again, and so on. All the time attempting to get the consciousness of those words into our consciousness. I had a client yesterday afternoon who is now reading the letters, said the same thing. Ooh, wow, I have to read that very, very slowly, Tom. I said, yeah, I certainly understand that. That is for sure. So as I started to read letter 8 last night, it made me determine that that's what I wanted to talk about today. The first 18 or so, maybe 20 paragraphs, depending on how you count them, it was, wow, if a person just understood, if they fully understood those 18 or 20 paragraphs, that says it all right there. That says it all. And it was, I thought, fantastic. And that's why I decided to talk about it today. So here's how the letter 8 begins. I have come to you again to speak of the true nature of existence. The truth of being is this. You who believe only in the material world live entirely in the earthly, finite world. You live within the dimension of the manifestation of your beliefs. I read that last night for I don't know how many times, dozen, maybe even more, and I was hooked. What did that mean? You live within a dimension of the manifestation of your beliefs. So I read it again and again and again, and I tried to get it. Earlier in the day, during a Healing Codes coaching call, the subject of Angelina Jolie came up and her decision to get a double mastectomy as a preventive health measure. And I wonder, is that an example of that statement? You who believe only in the material world live entirely in the earthly, finite world. You live within a dimension of the manifestation, and I have the underlined, manifestation of your beliefs. Is it? Clearly, I don't have full knowledge of her circumstances, and it's not my decision, it's her decision, it's her body. But I was wondering, is it possible that Angelina Jolie and others see physical manifestation but don't realize that the manifestation was created by their beliefs? That's what I started to think about. A person looks at some physical condition and they go, oh, that physical condition came from something physical. Like, really? Really? Or did that physical manifestation come from something not physical? Now, I would suspect those of us on this call think in terms of that, the physical being a symptom of the non-physical, the seen being a representation or a different vibrational frequency of the unseen, consciousness that is lowered in vibration so it can be perceived by the five senses. Maybe this lack of awareness and willingness to accept physicality as the ultimate reality could be, show up in people's voices like this. It happens. Oh, that's a sign of aging. Oh, that's an inevitable condition. And statistically, and they fill in the blanks with stuff. Or, oh, that's an accident. Those few statements talk about physicality as if physicality is the only reality. One of the points made throughout Christ Returns, which makes perfect sense, is the idea that if there is an effect, there is a cause. If there is a cause, there will be an effect. And the idea that a person is experiencing an effect and then have no awareness of where it came from, have no awareness of their own power to cause that effect. And that seemed kind of weird to me. Now, I say that, but at the same time, I also know that my thoughts and my feelings, my words and actions sometimes indicate my own lack of awareness. I would love to believe when I read the rest of that section from letter 8, talking about the highly evolved people, the spiritually aware people. I would love that to be me. Oh, yeah, I'm one of those special people. But I see a lot of examples in day-to-day life where my indicators are much more geared to the material world. So it's that, where am I? Am I in the physical world? Am I in this spiritual understanding? And so on. I do know this about Angelina Jolie, just like I know this about everything, that ultimately her sacrifice of her breasts on the altar of what I call Western medicine is going to result in good. Everything ultimately results in good. The better we know that, the more we trust in that, the more we grasp that, the more our stress goes down, and the sooner that the good can manifest in lives. As I said, you know, when you read stuff that's really complimentary of a person's awareness or their goodness or their spirituality or their holiness, you know, oh, I hope that's me, I hope that's me. I thought, you know what? What are the other indicators that say that I'm hitched to the material world? And I thought, you know, I think it's if the ego is in control. If the ego is in control, that's a kind of material world governor, if you will, that is trying to make me work based upon what I can see, feel, touch, you know, five sense kind of perception. I thought, I find it valuable in letter 5 where Christ is talking about the ego expressing through the personality in four driving needs. And I thought, oh, yeah, yeah, let me take a look at that. Let me take a look at that. And this is how it goes. I asked the Creator, Universal Consciousness, why mankind endured so much suffering and evil. I was then shown very clearly that all the problems experienced by humans arose from the central point of the self. Science now calls this the ego. It manifested itself in the personality as a driving need to defend the self from criticism and emotional or physical attack, and a similar driving need to push aside other people in order to arrive first in the race of life. It also manifested itself in the personality as a driving need to take all that was best for the self, despite the opposition of others, and a similar driving need to hold on to personal possessions, be they relatives, friends, material goods, or achievements, despite any opposition. I was also made to understand that without these two fundamental, eternal, undeviating impulses of creative being, there would be no creation. This is the secret of creation and the secret of existence and of individual being. And I thought, wow, I certainly am aware of when that stuff gets activated in me. I certainly can notice it. And maybe I can notice it much more effectively and real clearly in somebody else. Look at that greed. Look at that ego drive. Ooh, look at that. You know, do anything to get ahead. Ooh, look at that. What they'll do to the opposition in order to get what they want. It's like, yeah. Made me think, I wonder what tools I would use. If that's my game plan as a human being, those four driving needs, that's my menu or my action plan to do those four things. What tools am I going to use? Which brought me to the idea that the tools I would use and other people use to follow the instructions of the ego in the pursuit of those driving needs are what Christ says in letter 6 we're going to want to eliminate from our consciousness. I read, if your present consciousness is permeated with love of possessions and an inability to share with others, devising ways and means to become rich at the expense of others, stealing, failing to perform your work conscientiously or give good value for money, snapping, snarling, indulging in criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehood, double and devious dealing, slander. You are ego-driven. Your ego is in control, and you will find it difficult to move through the miasma of ego consciousness to be able to see reality. For this reason, I have come through the medium of these letters to help you understand exactly what is binding you down in your present conditions, the horror of which was unimaginable by the human mind a century ago. You know, well, I'm familiar with those tools. I would like to say I read about them, but they're handy tools. Or they've certainly been used enough, they ought to be handy, but in fact, they are counterproductive. We recognize now that we're going to reap what we sow. When we use those tools, we're going to harvest experiences of those tools being used on us, against us, either by ourselves or by other people, by circumstances. It's like, ooh, that's not really what I wanted to set in motion. But lack of awareness prevents us from understanding that when we cause certain things, we will make effects come into existence, which is nothing more than we reap what we sow. It's the same principle repeated over and over again in the Christ letters. So I want to read that portion of letter 8 that I read last night. I think it could be read, well, 50 times, 100 times, 1,000 times. I have no idea. It depends how deep you want the consciousness of these words to penetrate, or you want your consciousness to align with this consciousness. I was frankly stunned last night as I was reading it. I have come to you again to speak of the true nature of existence. The truth of being is this: you who believe only in the material world live entirely in the earthly, finite world. You live within the dimension of the manifestation of your beliefs. Those whose spiritual perceptions and lives have been raised in frequencies of vibration to merge with the spiritual frequencies of vibration of the spiritual dimension can perceive that they live in two dimensions. They are fully aware of this truth, and they live according to this truth, and evolve into ever higher frequencies of being. They are no longer bound by human belief, but live within the realizations that they live within infinity, in which are no limitations. The higher their vibrational frequencies of consciousness, the more aware they are that they live within infinity, and that only they set the limits on which they can aspire to. Those whose perceptions have been heightened in this way while still in their body have seen that there is only one dimension of actual individual being, and that this dimension is divine consciousness activity. Let me interrupt myself. I speak of this image of us living in an ocean of God. We're in an ocean of God, and we can influence the currents in that ocean. We can draw things to us, or we can push things away. We can make things better, we can make things worse. And it all is done with our own vibrations. Now, those of us who can grasp that, not only grasp it, say, intellectually, but can actually manage their own behaviors, if you will, do things, think, feel, speak, and act as if that's true, that we know that this is what's working for us, in us, and through us. It's like, it's a whole different experience of security and a feeling of protection, fulfillment of need. The anxiety goes down. The connectedness goes up. Aligned like that, and very pleasant. I continue. They may also come to fully realize there is a further dimension of universal consciousness in which the universal resides in perfect equilibrium and may be penetrated by none, because within this dimension, any individuality would be immediately drawn into the unity of being. When a soul reaches, in understanding and realization, the topmost level of the frequencies of vibration of consciousness, Christ consciousness, the soul can look down and review the levels of vibrations ascending and descending to those of humanity on earth, and know, with love and compassion, humanity is trapped in the lower vibrations of divine consciousness, hidden within the ego drive. Wholly unaware of the truth of being, their soul's true identity, and the earthly truth of the ego. Neither does it have the slightest awareness of the immense purpose behind its existence and the eventual mission it must embark upon. The task of the newborn soul is to experience, through means of its sheath, the psyche, all that these lower frequencies have to offer, and grow as a result of the mental, emotional events and experiences arising out of their thoughts and feelings. The soul must learn through trial and error. I'll repeat, through trial and error. The state of consciousness which makes it immensely happy, or burdened with grief and sorrow, which initiate various physical limitations. The purpose of life on earth is not to discover a means to experience undeviating joy and bliss, although this is what each soul longs for. Such bliss and joy would hinder the soul's progress into the higher spiritual vibrations of consciousness. Eventually, after many lifetimes of highs and lows, of comfort and sorrow, the psyche will wake up to the truth of its being and will realize that it has within itself the potential to draw on divine consciousness for insight, understanding, and knowledge, and to raise its spiritual consciousness vibrations to those of health, well-being, protection, inner growth, spiritual nutrition, and to radiate to others the nature of divine consciousness itself. I'm going to interrupt myself. That idea of trial and error, that's how we learn. That is how we learn most effectively. You can do a lot of theorizing with a child about not putting his or her hand on a hot stove. But I will tell you what, trial and error is a very, very quick and powerful and clear teacher in a circumstance like that. When you think of it, if that's really how we learned, why does our modern educational system not honor error? Ooh, what can we learn from that? What can we learn from that? What can we learn from that? I think in early days of education, maybe that's the way it was. When a teacher taught a subject and gave a test and saw what the kids did not understand, it was like, oh, I guess I wasn't clear about this and that and the other thing. I've got to change the way I present this information. I got to make it more meaningful. I got to make it clearer. I got to make it more memorable, or more hands-on, or something. So they would learn from that error. But what seems to have happened here is, and I think this is a religious thing as well, we don't honor the error as a teacher, we demonize it. We make the error, the mistake, a demon, like a Satan. You got to avoid that. You got to avoid mistakes. Stay away. That's bad. That's bad. That's bad. And if you do it too many times, you're bad. You're bad. It's like, that seems kind of weird. If that's how we learn, if we deny our errors and we don't examine our errors, we don't find the pearl inside of that oyster, we don't get any value from it. We only have the hand on the hot stove and the pain without any understanding being derived from that experience. It's like, ooh, that wouldn't make us very aware, wouldn't make us very smart, wouldn't make us very conscious or knowledgeable. In fact, it would contribute to us being stupid. It's like, I don't know where this effect came from. I don't know what caused it. I don't know. It's like, yeah. I think if we can stop denying our errors, now all of a sudden understand that this process is divinely inspired. It's divinely appointed. Folks, you're human beings. This is how you're going to learn, through trial and error, as you taste and you touch and you say and you feel various things of these lower frequencies. You're going to go, that didn't taste good. Oh, that didn't feel good. Oh, no. I like this. And we'll be able to guide ourselves to choose from a higher level of vibration. But to think we're going to not make mistakes, we're not going to have errors, and if we do, something is wrong with us, we are really being disadvantaged. We got taught that way, but we can start to undo that. If we can look at our errors and recognize, you know what? I made a lot of errors. What does that say? Now, the average person would say, ooh, you're dumb. On the other hand, we could say, based upon this conversation, if you've made a lot of errors, you have a lot of oysters of experience. All you have to do is be willing to address them, open them, be aware of them, and find the pearl, find the value, find the precious stuff that's within those pearls, those oysters. You go, yeah, we know, an oyster, not very pleasant to look at, kind of ugly, asymmetrical, hard to handle because the edges can be really sharp. You can cut your hands on those just handling them. And if you tried to open them, you would go, man, these things are difficult to open. They're very difficult to open. But the difference between an oyster that comes from the sea and the oyster of an experience, I believe the oysters of our experience, those errors that we've been told we made or we told ourselves made or which are less effective than we wished we had been at that moment, contain a pearl of value every single time. Every single time. You go, so what do I have to do? We have to have courage enough to confront them. We have to have courage enough to embrace them. Courage enough to look at them. Like, And as we do that, we end up with the pearls, which you can imagine, you have a few pearls in your hand as compared to bushels and bushels of heavy weighted oysters on your shoulder, on your back, weighing your heart and your mind down. You're going to be lighter. You're going to be wealthier. Having the knowledge of these experiences, of your trials and your errors, and gaining the value out of them, makes you and me richer. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. As we do this reframing, I think we can expect to see the ego get all kinds of activated, all kinds of stimulated. Whoa! And then start telling us that we're not enough. We're not enough. We have to be more. We have to do more. We have to have more than other people. And if you have learned to compare yourself to other people over the course of your life, which is part of the ego thing, which is how it goads us along the path of those four driving needs, compared to so-and-so, you're not enough, you're not enough, you're not enough. You don't have enough, do enough, be enough. So when we hear that insistence that we're no good, but we have to be better than everybody else, you go, you know what? I'm being goaded along like a cattle would be with a cattle prod. And the ego is doing that. And if we're going to use the material world, you know, the number of cars in my driveway, the number of the numbers in my checking account, the amount of this, the amount of that, the amount of friends, the amount of possessions, the amount of figure it out as the metric, as the measurement of our goodness, we're going to find ourselves being sacrificed by ourselves on the altars of the material world. I don't think that's a good idea. I think we can reach above that tendency if we fully grasp this part of letter 8. I continue. As I have said before, consciousness is life, and life is consciousness. Where there is life, there is consciousness. Where there is consciousness, there is life. Everything in existence is defined by the vibrational frequencies of consciousness. Light, sound, color, all physical phenomena, both living and inanimate. If you can change the frequencies of vibration of any single thing, you change the appearance of that thing, be it sound, color, gas, liquid, physical organs. When physical organs present an appearance of ill health, it is because the normal frequencies of vibrations of that physical organ have been reduced and the life within the organ has been depleted. Since science presents the universe as being matter possessing consciousness, but the truth is the universe is consciousness, which has taken on the appearance of matter as a result of a descent into the lower frequencies of vibration of consciousness. This is the true reality of existence, nothing else. Your existence is all a matter of frequency of vibrations. The higher the spiritual perceptions and adherence to spiritual thought, the more swift are the personal vibrational frequencies in the body, and the vitality is raised, and illness eventually disappears. That's less than three full pages out of, I'll say, a couple of hundred of Christ Returns. And that is an amazing, amazing amount of consciousness, in my opinion. We can reach above the material world, that plane of existence, and we can reach into the spiritual. We can reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. And then we will know, over time, the truth of existence. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.